all. And then I'll hand it off to Jonathan and Fujimoto-san to kind of take it from there.
Yeah, thank you, Ram. Actually, Hart's going to start us off.
Awesome.
Yep. All right, everybody. So thanks for coming today. Here's an outline of what we're going to be talking about. I'm going to be giving a brief introduction motivating the problem. Then Fujimoto-san is going to talk about connection chain. Then Jonathan will talk about the ACN Federation. Sorry? Did somebody say something? I guess not. Then Peter will talk about some design principles, and then hopefully we'll have a bunch of time left at the end for some open discussion, some questions. We'd love to hear what everyone else has to say about this. So we're looking for feedback. So let's get started. So many of you have probably seen this slide before. This might be the most repeated graphic in all of Hyperledger. I think this goes back to one of the original slide decks of Dan Oprey in probably 2015. But the idea is we live in a world of many networks, and these networks have to communicate with each other. And these networks have, you know, a lot of different requirements. So some networks might require distributed identity support, as indicated by some kind of member service that spans across networks. Maybe some networks require scalability for a lot of nodes. You know, obviously confidential contracts are going to require extra cryptography that maybe some other networks don't quite need as much of. Some networks are going to require fast transaction speeds. You don't want to be waiting at the grocery store for 10 minutes for a transaction to clear. You know, maybe some networks require legacy compatibility. And finally, you know, maybe some networks require some kind of auditor or other supervision or, some authority figure. So the basic idea is that, you know, if we run all these networks on blockchain, they all have many different requirements and sort of things they need that others don't need. So our perspective on this is that there will be no one blockchain to rule them all. And so with this in mind, if we are going to have sort of all of these different blockchains that need to communicate with each other, it's critical that we sort of get the layer between the two, the communication layer correct. And that's not exactly something that has received as much attention as in general building blockchains. So this is obviously a very hard problem. There are tons of blockchain solutions. They're not written with any kind of consistent pattern. So this is a tough problem. But we at Accenture Fujitsu have sort of independently been working on this and deciding that we would be more efficient if we work together on an open source solution for blockchain integration. And it's open source, so if any of you all are interested, we would love for you to join us. The more people we have, the better. So just a quick sketch of what we want to do, and that you can sort of look at the rest of the talk with this in mind. So our sort of long-term plans are we're going to start, and this is what we're doing right now, is we want to kind of develop design principles and figure out sort of how we can build this system. And one of the things that this working group might be most interested in is sort of coming up with a good architecture for interoperability. Obviously, things that this working group cares a lot about, like modularity, are very, very important here. So right now, we both have running code bases that focus on a little different things and are a little bit different. But the idea would be to try to try to merge these into a single coherent code base, avoid duplication. And finally, well, if all goes well, we would like to aim to establish a new project for interoperability. And this is a longer term thing. And obviously, we need things to go right. So obviously, it's not guaranteed that this will work, but we think this is an exciting area that's well worth the effort. So I don't expect you to copy this down right now, but we will publish these slides and you can take a look at the code we have right now and see what you think. So that's it for my part. I will turn the mic over to Fujimoto-san, who will discuss connection chain, unless there are questions.
Just a really quick one. Can you guys hear me? I swapped out the microphone.
Yep, I can hear you, Peter.
Okay, good. Thank you.
All right. If there are no questions, Fujimoto-san, please take over.
Hello, everyone. My name is Shingo Fujimoto from Fujitsu Laboratories, and I will briefly explain about to the our own solutions. But this is just one use case for our expecting new future interoperabilities. So the HUD, can you can you go to the next slide? Thank you. As an introduction, we have some problem for the migrating to the multiple blockchains. As the Hartsons presented, the marketplace is have the potentially have the many blockchains. So we cannot integrate those blockchains securely. So our idea from Fujitsu is they introduced the extended smart contract, but that is just the application of the interoperability feature for the we are proposing right now. Next slide, please. So then let me explain about the issues. So the blockchain is not a blockchain. In real world, we have the certain trust between the humans because they are impersons. Next. However, if we need to the use to the two ledgers, the which is not the managed by the single organizations or community, that we need to the some level of the technology to trust. Next. So the particularly the transfer for the multiple the blockchain is a very tough problem to be solved. Next slide, please. So go ahead. If we take a look, the Riker Inter-Asia protocol, which actually very similar technologies, but in my opinion, that is still keeping the there is some limitation Riker. We cannot treat to the non-financial values transfer across the blockchains. So I had the three examples there, IRP and the Atomic Swaps and Cosmos. That was one company's solutions. And all of them, can you click the next? Okay. The point is they are not designed for the non-financial fields, right? Because of the blockchain is now the use for the non-financial area. Thank you. Next one. So the concept of our extended smart contract is that we have the two interworking blockchains, A and B here. Next. So the Resolution connection chain itself is the smart contract running on the dedicated blockchain, which is designed for the interconnection between the blockchains. And we also have a code name, the interworking node, which actually working as a normal node of the interworking blockchain, as well as that had a externally communication outside of the blockchains. If we have the certain the mechanism was deployed on each blockchains, that we can the integrate those blockchain with the applications more securely. So the one of the application style is of the our extended smart contract is we are keep record of the those transaction as a some scenario, but that is just application things. So the what we need for the marketplace is we have a common mechanism to import and export to the those blockchain transactions. So that is a basic idea of the our extended smart contract. So the extended smart contract can perform to the business logic that which involve the multiple blockchains. Next slide, please. So the one of the use cases for the understanding is here's the Alice who is using to the her own currencies, and the shop club has another local currency or something that is another coin. So the click the button. When the Alice request to the connection chain, the money will be transferred to the escrow account, which was managed by the smart contract by the connection chains. And then next, the money from the coin on the coin on the coin B will be transferred from the interconnecting blockchain coin B. And click on this. So But this is a simple use case, but we need to the sum of the error case because of the two blockchain cannot be the same behavior. Click next. When the money was failed to the transfer for the second the blockchains, that case the because the intention is the send the money from one to the others. It has to be recovered that fair. Quick, please. That case, escrowed account will be returned back to the searcher that send it money, which is not usually possible. So the in the beginning of this session, mentioned about some additional feature like escrow or the AtomiSwap or some other blockchain specific functionality to be assisted. But the proposal is if once the such an interworking feature was prepared, this kind of the application can do the almost the same functionality as application level. So that is example. So I'd like to ask the comment at the later because this is just a introduction of the use case expected from the interoperability future. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Fujimoto-san. Greetings, everyone. My name is Jonathan Hamilton. I'm a senior software architect with Accenture's Products and Platforms group. Most of us call probably know services as Accenture's namesake, but APP is a portfolio of software businesses within the larger services entity. And in producing commercial software assets, we're an industrial consumer of open source. We just don't have much history of contributing back. So I'm excited here with Federated Interoperability, which is now known as Blockchain Integration Framework, to get to contribute back and work with the community. I'm also new to the blockchain space, so lots of change and challenges on all counts. But I'm excited to be here to share our history with federated interoperability and get your inputs on the path forward. As someone new, I also need to clarify that I don't get to take any credit for the work, solid work done to date. This is developed by Accenture's Labs team, which is the R&D arm of Accenture. And the Labs team has been exploring various blockchain challenges for the past 5 years. And they started working on interoperability about a year ago. And to start, I wanted to share a bit of their thinking for context in case it helps you all think through the design principles and the feedback you'd have on the design principles. So the properties they used in defining a solution are listed here. And just to kind of tick through them quickly, the commitment property means that there's a consistent way to stop an incomplete transfer process and keep the system in a consistent state. The property of validation means no actor can perform actions on a valid representation of an object without a set of predefined actors validating the action against a set of predefined rules. An interoperability system provides confidentiality if it limits the actors having access to valid representation of an asset during the transfer process, and it doesn't violate the confidentiality already existing on the interacting DLTs. The authenticity property means all representations of the same object within different systems are strictly identical across platforms and languages and provides ways to authenticate that identity. And last but not least, an interoperability system provides unicity if only one instance of a Git as an object exists in the system. If multiple representations of one object exist at the same time in the system, only one of them can be valid. And it prevents local and intra-blockchain controls against this type of duplicity during the transaction. Part of the lab's exploration has been on the various forms of interoperability. And as Hart said, none of us expect one DLT to rule them all. And so each interoperability approach is better suited to different use cases. The lab's team historic focus was to define a communication model to enable permissioned blockchain ecosystems to exchange any type of data or custom assets independent from the platform. The lab's team started on the left with a connector approach of one or more interoperability node connectors linked to multiple DLTs. The limitations they found there were on confidentiality because the connector accessed all the data in the clear, and fail-stop tolerance because the connector can decide to discard or have an issue on a particular transaction, which can create an asset being locked and delays or double spending. And they also found limits to vertical scalability. The approach that they eventually selected and became our contribution to labs is federated interoperability on the right. In this approach, the labs team redoubled their efforts around a few goals. First, they wanted to maximize coverage with as many smart contract and scripting enabled blockchains as possible. Second, the labs team wanted to avoid middlemen, instead put the requesters of the transfer at the middle of the transaction, enable them with proofs so they can interact as if they were on the same blockchain. Third, they wanted flexibility to make sure that data level protocol and standards can be adapted to the required level of confidence and use case for each DLT, rather than applying the same data protocol for all. Next, the labs wanted to leverage pre-existing roles in a permission blockchain ecosystem to safeguard incentives, governance, and ecosystem properties. And finally, the labs team aspired to a plugin model to extend already running blockchain logic or workflow, and of course, limiting the impact on running and established logic. This brought us to a federated interoperability approach that defines a new role in each of the ledgers, the interoperability validator. Interop validators represent their DLT. They are built on the nodes that are already part of the governance or consensus mechanism. These validators are discoverable by our other interoperable DLTs, such as sharing public keys. Interop validators form an overlay network, which handles export requests coming from the local DLT. Validators sign or reject requests, When a request is signed by a minimum quorum of validators, it can be considered true by the other DLTs. And the overlay network is fail-stop tolerant. If a validator crashes, the network will continue work as long as a configurable minimum quorum is maintained. Let's see what this looks like in terms of a simple use case to export one asset from DLT1 to DLT2. And of course, more complex interoperability use cases would require composing workflows and certainly more complexity. So to start, some actions performed in the DLT1, such as requesting to transfer an asset. Second step, a local node requests to export this new asset to one of the validators. The third step, the validator then performs a local check of this request. And the fourth step, the request is then broadcast to the validators to gather signatures, again, with that configurable minimum quorum. The request plus the signatures is handed back to the requester. And then in step six, the message certified by DLT1's transfer validators can then be delivered from any node via any secure off-chain communication system to the recipient in DLT2. That recipient can check the signatures attached against the public key they trust and trigger a DLT-wide verification of the signature in a local smart contract. In terms of high-level architecture, we're showing how this looks with Fabric and Corda. We also did work to support Quorum as well. The red boxes show the components we added to the DLTs to enable interoperability. In the light blue boxes, the off-chain components were created to enable discoverability of the validators via public keys, to handle the signing and signature gathering, to verify the data of the request against the ledger. Sorry, there's some sort of noise. Hello? Thanks. In the green boxes, the on-chain components had capabilities added to manage trusted public key on-chain and verify the signatures on-chain. I hope this is a high-level overview of what has been, I hope this has been a helpful overview to help understand the Accenture contribution. And with that, I'll hand off to Peter to provide an overview of the design principles that we've been working with the Fujitsu team on.
Thank you, Jonathan. So I am Peter Shomodivari. I work under Jonathan's leadership in Accenture. I will be working on a project in the open source space. I have some experience with running open source projects. So I will use that experience to hopefully help make the project a success in the community. And I wanted to call your attention to these links. We will share the slides after, but it's important to note that we are looking for feedback. So if you do have opinions, questions, suggestions, then please either come to the Rocket Chat or just apply directly on the document. And can I grab the share, the screen share?
Yeah, I released it. You can give it a shot.
Can you see my screen?
I can see it now. Yep.
Okay, good. Okay, so this is the document behind that link. Everybody should have access. If not, again, just contact me on the Rocket Chat and we'll figure it out. It's a long list of design principles. I will go through them one by one and just give a quick example of what it is that we mean by that in practice. And also an implementation design is on the way, which will have much more details hashed out about these things. But for now, this is the vision. And the other thing I wanted to clarify before we get going with it is that we don't necessarily know 100% how to achieve these design principles, but we wanted to lay out the vision without constraining ourselves onto what's possible right now, according to our own knowledge. So the first one, wide support, interconnect as many ecosystems as possible. Basically, what this means is that down the road, if you invent a new DLT and you implement it, and then you come to us and ask, does your system or framework support my blockchain, like Bitcoin 2.0, then our answer should never be like, no, and it never will. Our answer should always be, well, not at the moment, but we will figure out a way to make it happen because the design allows flexibility for that. So it's just a matter of openness. And then second, the already mentioned plugin architecture from all possible aspects. Now, this just means that we know we cannot satisfy every need with one single code base. So in the end, when there are trade-offs to be made, our fallback will be to lift certain parts of the code to plugins and let the community implement multiple versions of that functionality based on what they need, which ties back to the wide support. For example, if you invent a brand new blockchain with a new consensus algorithm that has never been before, then we won't say, well, we already set our consensus algorithms in stone and we can't help you. We will never say that. We will say, let's implement the plugin for that. And double spending. We want to prevent it where possible, but we also acknowledge that just by the way a lot of the existing systems work, this may not be completely feasible in all the use cases, but we definitely want to enable it where it is possible. For example, if you're transacting between two permission blockchains that both guarantee transactional finality, then obviously we can lean on those properties of the interacting blockchains and make sure that there is no double spending. But on the other hand, there will be some responsibility pushed to either the end user or the application developer if you are doing an integration between blockchains that are different in nature of transaction finality. For example, if you were to receive money from Bitcoin, then we could specify a block threshold, a block confirmation threshold, but obviously we could not guarantee that the Bitcoin blockchain will not fork. So those things we want to be transparent about, but we cannot prevent all of them. DLT feature inclusivity, sort of just another way of saying we need a plugin architecture, but it is worth saying specifically that if you have a new feature in your blockchain that didn't exist before anywhere else, we want to enable the integration to leverage that, as long as it is not impossible just by the nature of how the integration will work with other blockchains which do not have that feature. And low impact. So again, if you come to us and ask us about us supporting your blockchain, we don't want to come back with an answer saying, oh yeah, we can do that as soon as you change your consensus algorithm or you change something that is core to your design. Transparency, very important. If you're transacting using the blockchain integration framework, you should always be aware of what is happening exactly to the extent possible. Obviously, if certain privacy settings are in effect in the transacting blockchains, then we can only give you as much transparency as it is provided by those systems. Automated workflows, it just means customizability when the transfers happen, and sort of a hook structure that allows interacting parties to get notification of what's happening event handling. And this should have been one of the first ones. Default to highest security. Basically, we just want to make sure that by default, the users of the system are safe, or as safe as possible. But at the same time, since we expect enterprises to need backward compatibility with older versions of software, older protocols, we do not rule out supporting things that are not considered completely secure by the community, but those will be strictly opt-in. Nothing like that should be enabled by default. Transaction protocol negotiation. That's another way of saying that we want complete transparency, and we want to push the responsibility and the decision-making to the application developer or even the end user as much as possible, because that's how we can remain a kernel that is as unopinionated as possible. So for example, between transacting parties, there should always be a point before the transaction happens where a decision can be made if the transaction should happen, and the details of the transaction, the metadata about the interacting chains, should be available at that point. For example, if I'm receiving money from you and you are paying with Bitcoin, then I should be made aware of that before I commit to the transaction itself, just to make sure that if I have any reservations about that, then I can say no. And the last four of them are really getting closer to implementation details. Basically, they just talk about the protocol details, so I'm not going to go into details on those. I think I'll just stop here. No, I'll mention that currently in the Accenture code base, which is now the Hyperledger Labs blockchain integration framework, we currently support Fabric and Quorum. So I was mentioning Bitcoin a lot because it's a very good example, but we don't yet support that. Just wanted to make it clear. And that's it. Thank you very much. And don't hold back with the questions.
Hi, this is Didiban. The design principles that you outlined, to what extent, I mean, so I guess the first question I have is there a reference architecture for interoperability that you're proposing? And do these design principles, or are these design principles based on that reference architecture? And is the reference architecture the one that was just described, the model from Accenture?
No, yeah. I wouldn't call this a reference architecture. That's something we could create in the future, but for now, this is not intended to be a boilerplate for others to use as well. It's really just for our project.
Right. Yeah,
but the other part of it is we want to get to a converged architecture. And so we expect that these design principles will guide that next step on what that converged architecture looks like. That the architecture of Accenture's contribution, the architecture of Fujitsu's contributions are different and satisfy different use cases. But we want to find the commonalities for a core architecture, as well as the framework for the plugin-based architecture that would support multiple use cases from that core plus plugins.
Right. I think there are a few different approaches to solving interoperability, and you guys clearly outlined. The Fujitsu model was one example, and the Accenture was another good example of how to solve this. And then we also have protocols like ILP, which is a fairly well-designed protocol for doing value transfer across ledgers, right? I'm just wondering here if it is possible to kind of converge on a single architecture, or are we going to have a framework that would recommend different pieces or patterns that we would apply to solving different interoperability problems?
I guess in that sense, it is a reference architecture in the angle that we recommend that the way you do interoperability with your new blockchain or with an old one is that you integrate with us through plugins and connectors, so you don't necessarily have to contribute anything to our framework. You just implement the protocol that we will be proposing in a much more detailed sense later, and you use that. So you could say it is a best practice that you're proposing as well.
Right. I have one more question that is, I guess, more related to the Accenture's federated model. I noticed that in one of the slides described an overlay network. My first question is, does that federated model solve the three broad use cases for interoperability, if I could use that phrase? One being asset transfer, the other one being value transfer, and the other one being the transfer of reference data. So the first question is, does the architecture solve that? And the second question is, how does the overlay network actually coordinate the signing of the state? Is that a point-to-point communication between the nodes in the overlay network? How do they kind of coordinate this signature generation?
So the signature generation is something that is being reworked at the moment, actually. Right now, I can tell you it's out there in the open. You can see it in the code as well, that we use a virtual sort of overlay network based on zero MQ. The nodes communicate with each other through a leader. We have a leader election, which is based on etcd, distributed locks and leases. But that's being reworked as we speak, because we also want that to be configurable or pluggable in a certain sense, because we realized that there's other solutions out there. For example, what Fujitsu's connection chain is doing, they use a fabric network that they pull up to store transaction data. So we want to do away with the leadership elections on our own nodes, on our own overlay network, and refactor that so that it is possible to use different implementations even for that. But I just wanted to tell you how it is right now to give some context to answer the question.
Thank you, Peter. This is Singh speaking. So even the currently the Fujitsu had a different solution. We have a certain similarity, like we need to the some trust anchor that currently do not exist. So the way of the having the that one can be a specific blockchain can be the vendor specific or solution specific. Like I believe that is depend on the policy of the blockchain participants. So the sometimes the all participant has to be agree on the certainness of the specific transaction. In some cases, the only single end user can be agreed or confirmed the fact of the truthness of the transactions. So we are expecting to absorb such a difference from the independent optionalities. But that is just a starting point. So we are still discussing to the how to solve it. Actually, that is a good question point, I believe. Thank you.
Thanks. I do have quite a few more questions, but I'm going to let others in the call have a chance to speak as well.
Jonathan, you mentioned, this is Vipin, you mentioned that you're converging or trying to converge on the two architectures together. Where do you think the greatest difference is, and how do you intend to get them to come together? One of the ways that I've seen when you have different representations of value or currency or any other kind of data on blockchains is then to bridge the gap is to convert it into some kind of a canonical form. Then, you know, if you write converters that go from one blockchain to a canonical form, and then on the other side, from the canonical form to the blockchain B, or from blockchain A to canonical form, a canonical form back to blockchain B. That's just, you know, not only the data representation, but also other characteristics. So that's one way I've seen. Then, of course, having people, you know, stand-ins that do the escrowing, which seems to be the case with ILP and, you know, other protocols. So in this way, your two approaches, how are you thinking of converging them?
Yeah, thank you for that feedback, Vipin. I don't think we're that far in our thinking, and maybe one of the other guys has something they like to say about it, but we are just starting the code level collaboration between the groups. So far, we've been talking about the architecture principles, and as Hart mentioned, we want to get from those architecture principles to a design as the next step. But the The Accenture code was only recently open sourced about a month ago, and the Fujitsu code was only open sourced a week or so ago, only 2 weeks. So it's, you know, even though we've been talking and working on this for a few months now, the code level sharing is only just starting. And that will help, you know, guide our decisions on convergence.
And I would like to add that my answer to questions like this will always be that if there's two different ways to do something and there are people holding their hands up saying, this is how we want to do it, and it differs, then we have to lift that functionality into plugins and allow the people to choose which one they use for their implementation.
Yeah, this is Shingo. Yeah, the same, the things, just adding to the things we are, we actually try to figure out to the how to merge for the both side, and that we will working on the single code base for the joint derivative. So the we are also welcome to the another contributors to be joined for the the to be things going forward. So we had the both side Accenture and Fujitsu had a. After the few private conference call, that we some level of the confidence of the we can merge the two solutions into one.
What gives you that confidence? That's what I'm asking. I mean, you obviously talked about something very specific, and
As Jonathan's mentioned, the Fujitsu released the code a couple of weeks ago only. So we just started. So, but we think that we can merge because of the we have the certain similarity in the architecture level, but the code level we have some level of the differences. So the once we can figure out which one would be better for the basement, that we can start the immediately. So that is the reason of the confidence.
Yeah, and I'll just reiterate, which you know, we have the confidence to proceed, but success is not guaranteed, as Hart pointed out. We'll see where it takes us, but we think given it's such an important problem, we want to make the effort even in the face of risk.
Yeah, before the code open source, the both had certain papers and materials open and closed the communications. So that also helped the understanding the each other's solutions. Mm-hmm. So we are good state, I believe. So please look at the progress for the future.
Yeah, and we want to also claim that we have all the wisdom to pull it off, even though we have a lot of experience amongst ourselves. We're seeking input from this group and further collaboration from this group or others that you may know and refer that are interested in the space to help us progress more efficiently.
Thanks, Jonathan, Shingo, Peter, and Hart. That was excellent. One question I had though was, what do you think is the end state from an architectural point of view? And, you know, I'll provide a little bit more context in the approach that we were taking with the interop model, that the ideal model that we were kind of roughly shooting towards in the work we were doing here, which was to define a set of functions that would be integrated with, you know, inside each blockchain framework, if you will, and you know, at least the model I had in mind was what are the functions that need to go into the DLTs, and as well as you know, the wire protocols themselves, if we can standardize that. So I guess the real question is, how do you see this long term integrating with the platforms and what lives outside the platforms.
Well, by integration, you mean?
So do you see this as an external interoperability component, or do you see parts of this becoming, you know, with standard functions that are natively incorporated in different DLTs, you know, years from now, if you will?
Hopefully, the optimal end goal for me would be that it becomes sort of a standard, even if not an explicit standard, at least an implicit standard, you know, the kind of thing that people just mention by default when someone new comes along and starts asking questions on a forum about how things are done. Then they just point to us and say, that's how it's usually done. It works pretty well for most of the use cases. So just go look at that. So it could become a standard like that, but not necessarily an explicit standard.
Well, I think the choosing to the one solution or architecture is pretty difficult, but I believe that my personal opinion, that I'd like to ask to the architecture group people to the some of the models of the interworking, we can the design the system to support such models, like the completely synchronized two measures. And for the another use cases could be some of the another variation of the relationship between the regions. So those kind of the type of the relationship or the interworking was the input from the architecture group. It would be nice to reflect to the design principle and further code level merging. What do you think about that idea?
That's an excellent idea. So perhaps we can have some follow-up sessions where if we take use cases and dive into kind of the interop interworking call flows, and that would be kind of useful to kind of follow up, to bubble up into the common models to see how much overlap there is to the way we've been thinking about it so far. And of course, it's pretty early days from what we've done as well. So it'll be great to collaborate with you folks to kind of flesh that out.
If I may close with the last bit, where you guys, both of you seem to have nodes collocated in the blockchains you are attempting to bridge. So these nodes behave like ordinary nodes, but then they have this Uber node properties that then allow them to transit the value across the chains. And nowhere do I've yet to come across somewhere where you have a synchronous transfer.
In my understanding, that is depend on the use cases, but I believe the most of the use cases are not providing to the official service for the interworking. However, the user having a boss account for the multiple regions, and that can be the possible to provide to the service by the certain responsibilities, like let's say some of the service provider have their own accounts and the transfer to the one value to the others. In that case, we do not need to the agreed to about the behavior on the each blockchain, but the asset unless it does not affect the whole behaviors, like we only operate to our own accounts. Is that make sense for you?
Just one One more comment. I'm somewhat new to, this general forum here. And I kind of followed some other work that was going on in the interoperability architecture working group. I'm not sure, Ram, if that's something that you kind of head or are part of. I was wondering if it's possible for us to organize another discussion on how to work together on this specific topic. And the reason is that my team here at IBM Research, we've been also working on this for about a year now. And we have a slightly different take and a model on solving this. The core part of it is very similar. It's based on the notion of proofs and the extraction of proofs from ledgers. But we've also been looking at a broad area of patterns that apply to a variety of use cases, including mechanisms for contracts to directly call functions in other ledgers, the temporal dependence on state on different ledgers, and a few other things. And I've just kind of looked into the work that Accenture did, and I'm hearing Fujitsu's work for the first time today. I think it might be useful if you could have another discussion, perhaps on bringing some of these efforts together, and seeing how we can kind of collaborate on evolving a reference architecture of sorts that can address interoperability.
Yeah, that's great. Hi, Dylan. It's Jonathan. Glad to hear that. It's not yet published, but we're working to get on a weekly meeting set on the Hyperledger community calendar. So it should be there any day now. And actually, I'll follow up with the community architects after this. We'd hope to have it up there before this call. But I think that's probably the next logical forum for us to continue progressing collaboratively. And certainly welcome the opportunity to come back to the architecture working group with updates and continued guidance. But we are planning a weekly open collaboration forum where yourself and others can come join. Just not on the calendar today like we'd hoped.
Excellent. Thanks for that, Jonathan. And when do you expect to kick this off? Do you plan to do that this month or starting next year?
Yeah, well, it'll be a bit funky with the end of year holidays, but we had requested to start it on Monday the 9th, so we could go right from this into keeping up our momentum. So Ron, maybe I can follow up with you on releasing the materials, making sure that's out there.
That would be great. And, if there's interest in having a follow-up session in this forum with maybe a little bit more of a double click on call flows and trying to kind of converge on models, we'd be happy to kind of work on that as well. So let's take it offline and see if there's interest to kind of do that. I think we're a little over time. I think, unfortunately, this is a great discussion and great presentations. Look forward to kind of following up on kind of next steps. Also want to briefly mention, maybe let me stop the recording here.